The great Eddie Harris, Chicago born and raised, with one of my favorites of all time, titled Listen Here, and that's a clue about our program today. It's the lead track from his 1967 album, The Electrifying Eddie Harris, aptly named because Harris developed and introduced what we just heard, the electrified saxophone. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a doozy of a program for you today. You see, we'll be talking about, conglomerate misbehavior. Charles K. Ortel, a former Wall Street banker and investor, blew the whistle on General Electric in 2007-2008 after tearing its financial reports apart and finding that the conglomerate had been lying to its investors, fraudulently overvaluing its stock by hundreds of millions of dollars. 15 months ago, Ortel began looking forensically at the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, a politically connected philanthropic conglomerate with multiple related entities, global interests, and highly questionable fundraising practices. Like General Electric, he said, its financials were telling a very different story from that is officially reported. And he began to dig deeper and deeper. He's with us today in an exclusive, no-holds-barred interview, and he's again blowing the whistle. What he has discovered about the Clinton Foundation, he says, is that it is a complete fraud and ought to be investigated. And I thank you, Charles Ortel, for being with us today. Are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you very well.
Yeah, thanks so much for
being with us today.
On.
Well, could you talk about first what you did in 2007, 2008, the instinct you had about General Electric that propelled you into this forensic adventure that led to you discovering that GE had in fact overvalued its stock by hundreds of millions of dollars. You write that corporations tell their stories in rather mundane ways, and people would think boring ways, and that's from financial reports. But financial reports to you are a whole different thing. Talk about that a bit.
Sure, Eutrice. First of all, just to set the record straight, GE was overvalued by hundreds of billions, with a B, of dollars,
billions.
Not millions.
Thank
and,
you for that.
And it was basically the thing about financial reports, and I've learned this through now operating with journalists for many, many years. In the main, journalists are people who are really, really good with the written and spoken word, but sometimes not so good with numbers. And I'm somebody who's pretty good with numbers and not so good with the written and spoken word. So for me, my training has always been looking at financial reports and trying to figure out, is a company overvalued or undervalued? Is this a good investment? Is it a bad investment? Back in 2007 and 8, I had taken about 5 years off. I needed to gain custody of my two children, and I was happily raising them when the thought occurred to me that it might be fun to make money again. So I decided that I would study the financial reports of well-known companies to form a view about which ones were doing well and which ones were not doing so well. And I initially selected General Electric, thinking that I would find A-plus report cards. And instead, to my shock and horror, as I started tearing General Electric's publicly available information apart, I actually thought for a while that I was completely crazy, because where the analysts were talking about it being a fine company, I thought it was in desperate shape. So I spent a bit of time on it. It's a very complex business, far more complicated than the Clinton Foundation. And in the end, to save you the long version of the story, it took me about 18 months or so to get on television, on Bloomberg Television, and right on the day when AIG was seized on September 16th, 2008, and the market was going crazy and everybody was really worried, I got on television and I said, well, there's a bigger problem. People think GE's safe and a rock. In reality, it's the Titanic.
And all these years later, you decided to take the same attitude, the same sense of forensics, and your eyes are trained on the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. Why the foundation?
Well, I have this idea. I had this idea several years ago that there's a hole in the marketplace for a service that would help people who have money and want to keep it and build it, people who are interested in American history and learning new perspectives and tales on our long history, and people who care about giving money to charity. Now, I know a fair bit about the first two topics, but up until about, early last year, I had never closely looked at the publicly available data that anybody can find on any charity. And it occurred to me, whenever I hear something is really complicated and nobody understands it, I'm drawn to that flame like a moth. You know, I want to say, well, you know, maybe there's something here. Maybe I can figure out something that others aren't seeing. So I started with the federal tax forms and federal filings, the U.S. filings of the Clinton Foundation. And then a light bulb went off, not a GE light bulb, but a light bulb. And it occurred to me that there are state filings, U.S. state filings, and then furthermore, because the Clinton Foundation operates in so many foreign countries, that there are foreign filings. And when I started looking in deeply into the public domain, I discovered that this thing was illegally constructed and that it has been illegally operated since the very beginning.
Well, what did that revelation do? Or did you start doubting yourself that maybe you were wrong?
Well, in this case, I'm fortunate, having been through the GE and other matters, I now have a bunch of friends I can talk to about this who are highly experienced. And I actually serve on the board as a trustee of a foundation that's trying to help the survivors of the Srebrenica massacre in Bosnia. So I know a little bit more now about this kind of stuff. And very quickly, in fact, last year I wrote an article that appeared in Breitbart. I think the title was something like, "With so many red flags, why is it the IRS auditing the Clinton Foundation?" And that got a fair amount of attention. And then I realized that because Hillary was then and may still be the presumptive nominee, that any sort of criticism of the Clinton Foundation would have to be more bulletproof even than what I did for GE. So I spent the last 15 months going over painstakingly, looking at this from many, many different angles. The simple way to think about this is that when you set up a charity, a public charity, that's something that raises money continuously on the Internet, telephone, mails, from the general public, you have to select a specific tax-exempt purpose. You can't say you're going to do anything you may want to do or a whole bunch of general things. And what this charity was established to do was uncontroversially to set up a presidential archive and research facility in Little Rock. Prior presidents had done that. This application was tendered while Bill was still president. It sailed right through. And that is actually, those two purposes are the only two things that they were specifically authorized by the IRS to do. But when you get into the records, many of which are hidden, they're not on the Clinton Foundation website, so they're purposely omitted from the Clinton Foundation website, but that I found in the public domain, what you see is that this foundation, first of all, was not, that Bill Clinton and a man called Ira Magaziner directed the bulk of its operations, even though neither man was a named trustee or officer. in the crucial early period, 2000 to 2005, when this transformation occurred. You're just not allowed to do that. I mean, you're supposed to have trustees are responsible for these charities. They've got to control them. And to the extent you operate abroad, you've got to exercise even tighter control than if you were a domestic charity.
Well, I was reading a posting on your website, May 22nd. That's just yesterday. And I just want to share with the listeners what you said, what you shared. Your help, dear friends, your help and encouragement in recent weeks already are bringing overdue attention upon the largest unprosecuted charity fraud ever attempted, that being the network of illegal activities worldwide whose heart is the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. The Clinton Foundation, directed by certain individuals and together with numerous affiliates, has been part of an international charity fraud network whose entire cumulative scale, counting inflows and outflows, approaches and may even exceed $100 billion measured from 1997 forward. Yet state, federal, and foreign government authorities that should be keenly aware of this massive set of criminal frauds so far move at a snail's pace, perhaps waiting for the Federal Bureau of Investigation to reveal the scope of its work and the nature of any findings. In the short term, you can help by educating yourselves concerning strict laws that do apply to publicly supported charities, including all Clinton Foundation entities and their fundraising agents. And there's one concrete cost-free step you can take. You can join me in prodding the Federal Trade Commission to reverse its incorrect decision not to undertake review of the Clinton Foundation record, even though it has recently and vigorously pursued far smaller offenders that committed illegal activities whose consequences were less damaging. Now, that's some heavy language, and that's quite a series of accusations when you say that the Clinton Foundation is in effect the largest unprosecuted charity fraud ever attempted. And you're not just your regular schmo saying this stuff. You're the guy who brought down GE. So I ask you, how sure is your firepower here?
100%. And I'll tell you why. In the accounting world, which is a world that I'm very comfortable looking at and understanding, it is obvious to somebody who has spent as much time, I mean, I got out of business school in 1980, that when somebody calls a document an audit, but it's not really an audit, it's less than an audit, it's not compliant, it's obvious to somebody like me. If you, with it, the beauty of accounting, what's called double entry accounting, is your books have to balance. There can't be discrepancies. So when you find discrepancies, even if they're small, the dollar, there's a problem. And I have found hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of discrepancies comparing what the Clinton Foundation discloses in its financial accounts with what donors to the Clinton Foundation say they gave to the to the foundation. So I'm very sure of my ground. I've spent a lot of time on this. I reached this conclusion that it was a fraud early on, but I didn't figure out how big it was until the last several months. So with the Clintons, like anything else, what they want to show you is not going to be the whole picture. So what they want to show you is just the Clinton Foundation itself. But in addition to that Clinton Foundation, there's a very large operation allied to the Clinton Foundation in Haiti. So to give you round numbers, the Clinton Foundation over the umpteen years from 97 to the present has declared inflows of $2 billion. But in Haiti, there's never been an accounting for the money that went to Haiti, and that's about $14 billion. Then there's a tsunami fund that Bill was involved with in East Asia, and people say that's about, could be as much as $12 billion. Then there's something called the Global Fund, which is the large umbrella organization that Bill is linked to through his association with a felon, Rajat Gupta, who used to run McKinsey. That's above $50 billion. And you just go on and on and on and on. Let's go to the small piece, the Clinton Foundation. And your listeners, I'm sure you have people who listen to your radio show who understand accounting. Let them go and try to find a real audit for the Clinton Foundation for the period 1997 through 2003. I will tell you right now, they will not. And I'll tell you where you can find some for 2000 to 2003 that prove my point. That's on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts state regulator site. So I have found, and I don't want to bore people, but I have found many, many crucial documents that undercut the credibility and the authenticity of what purports to be financial audits. And you're not allowed to do this. The rules in, as regards bigger foundations, bigger charities, generally those that have annual inflows of $500,000 or yet per year or less, or more rather, you have to get a real audit. You're not allowed to say, you know, that to swear that you've filed your filings with the various authorities without attaching a real audit, because there's so many of these charities, about 1 million in the U.S., that the IRS is not capable of looking at all of them. So they want to make sure that you get a real audit. And I defy any of your listeners or any expert you want to find to tell me that any financial statement provided by the Clinton Foundation is actually an audit. Because it's not.
How did the Clinton Foundation succeed in going from an innocuous purpose, like, you know, set up an innocent library, a presidential library in Arkansas, where Bill Clinton was governor, to a whole bunch of things that sound like a major multinational conglomerate that is raking in these billions and billions of dollars that are not accounted for, that you said the money isn't matching up with what they said they did with it. So how does this continue since 1997 without a serious forensic audit by the entity that audits regular schmoes like you and me, if we have a 501c3? And by the way, do 501c3s have authority to engage in the kind of work that the Clinton Foundation, through its subsidiaries, engages in, which is more like foreign policy or diplomacy or consulting, and basically, it's for hire?
Well, those are some great questions. Let's start at the beginning. In the period October 97 to January 2001, Bill was still president of the United States, and his team was in charge of the IRS, and his team was in charge of the Department of Justice. And we saw what happened in, I think, the 18th of January, when he pardoned a horrible criminal, Mark Rich. His attitude towards how you handle things was, let's say, questionable. What he did, or what the Clinton team did, is they inserted Lois Lerner into the department of the IRS, a crucial department that oversees charities, in January 2001, shifting her from the Federal Election Commission. She was in that role until, I think, December 2005 or so, and then she was in charge of the whole apparatus that looks at and decides whether to prosecute or whether not to prosecute charities. And she stayed
now,
there.
This is the same Lois Lerner, not to cut you off, but this was the same Lois Lerner who ended up as at the epicenter of a major scandal with the IRS, is it not?
Right, and it's the flip side of that scandal. I mean, everybody, people have been focusing on, you know, whether or not the IRS went too far under Lois Lerner, targeting conservative groups. The flip side of that same scandal is, did Lois Lerner and her team purposely choose not to prosecute friends? such as the Clinton Foundation. And I strongly suspect that to be the case. So that's one set of issues. The second set of issues is changing your purpose. If you and I set up a foundation and we were going to help people in the Caribbean who had tuberculosis, in order to get that foundation through the IRS, we'd have to have on our team people who, A, understood the Caribbean, and, B, understood tuberculosis. We couldn't just start collecting money for what sounds like a worthy cause. So you start out with a narrow purpose. In your application, you make a truthful declaration to the IRS. This is my team. This is what we're going to accomplish. These are the metrics you care about. And then you go off, you get approved, and you're organized. That's the organization phase. And then you operate in compliance with the law. Charities are not allowed, unlike corporations, charities are not allowed to engage in any illegal activity. You're standing in the shoes of government. So you come up with that purpose, you follow the purpose. If you want to change your purpose, you've got to go back to the IRS and say, hey, you know, I said I was going to help people with tuberculosis in the Caribbean. Now I want to preserve elephants in India. You know, and then you get your elephant team together and your Indian team together, and you show the IRS that you did accomplish your first purpose or you're making progress, and you get approved. The IRS specifically states in the various forms that if you go ahead and change your purpose and then ask for approval, you will be turned down. So the short answer to your question is, Bill just did whatever he wanted to do.
Why is this rattling you so? I mean, what kind of dog do you have in this fight?
Well, I'd say the first thing that rattles me a little bit, I'm not involved in elected politics, and I'm not just saying that. I have no interest in party politics and in running for office or anything else like that. I do have, and I don't like the Clintons. That I will, you know, I just don't like the example that they set in their personal and political lives over years. But I also don't like the Bushes particularly. So, it's not for me a partisan issue. I do care about charity. And, you know, what your listeners will understand that most people don't is that it is not the rich who give disproportionately to charity. The data is clear, and I put that in a report on my site dated April 20th of last year. It is crystal clear that the bottom 80% of this country is by far the most generous giving to charity as a percentage of their income, and because they have little wealth, as a percentage of their wealth. So, yeah, and a lot of money, the people who probably should not be giving to charity, instead should be saving, give to charity. And they do so thinking that the forms, if they check the forms of these charities, are accurate, and that the trustees are honest and caring. So when you see a former president of the United States operate something for years flagrantly in violation of state, federal, and foreign laws, that tends to tick you off. And I decided that, you know, after I was sure of my ground, that I was somebody who could make an issue of this, and that I would have the fortitude to lay out the case, which is what I'm doing now.
Well, it seems to be taking hold. Just yesterday, the New York Times published an opinion piece by Albert Hunt, who wrote for Bloomberg View, and the headline was "Possible Conflict at Heart of Clinton Foundation." And what he's urging very calmly and very nicely, but he's not suggesting anything wrong, is just saying, well, maybe the Clintons should kind of sever ties with the foundation and get an independent or semi-quasi-independent administrative team to take over, but maybe that would help things and alleviate this question of possible conflicts of interest and even, you know, under the radar things that have cropped up over these years. Even though it's an opinion piece that says that the Clintons should really revamp the administrative hierarchy of this of the foundation, it makes no allegation whatsoever, like you are making, of wrongdoing, fraud.
Right. Well, see, here's the thing. You know, I read that piece. In fact, I referred to it in that article you mentioned on my site. Al is an extremely smart veteran analyst, particularly of politics. But he makes the comment that the people behind the Clinton Foundation are principally wealthy donors and corporations. That's not true. The people behind the Clinton Foundation fall in two camps, large governments. And there, when you say a large government, it's really the underlying taxpayers in the end of these governments that are going to pay for things. And then various Internet-based solicitations that have been improperly handled. So he's wrong on both counts. And he's also wrong on stating so definitively that $2 billion has been raised. Because nobody really knows. There's never been an audit here. Nobody knows how much money may have actually been sent towards the Clinton Foundation, which is, you know, is the typical way in which foundation fraud occurs. You say that you have a foundation, a slew of money comes towards the operators of the foundation, and then if they're not honest, they choose to remit a portion of it. So they could remit, they could get $100 billion and give you two, they could get $5 billion and give you two. Unless you have an audit, you're never going to know the truth, and they've never had one.
I want to go back to that story line early in the interview about how you read financial documents. You say financial documents actually tell a story about a company. And this was what drove you in your probe of General Electric when you found that the company was overvaluing its stock by hundreds of billions of dollars. So far, from the documents that you have acquired and reviewed very closely and consulted with others on, what is the story that is emerging here? What is the common theme, not just from the Clinton Foundation, but all of its intertwined and connected subsidiaries all over the world? What is the picture you're getting from these documents?
All right, well, there's a number of ways to answer that question. The first question, my father, just by way of background, is still alive. He's almost 90, and he's a nuclear physicist, and he trained me well, as did my mother, who, not alive, was an expert musician. And the first thing to ask when you consider any case like this is, you know, what is it you're truly looking at? Don't accept, you know, what people say you're looking at. Just ask yourself, what is this? So the first question here is this actually a charity? And the way you answer that question has nothing to do with numbers. It has everything to do with the law and letters. So as I went and started asking those type of questions myself and talking to some lawyers, I concluded that this was not a validly constituted charity. And that got me very concerned. So then I said, all right, let's check. Let's take the biggest donor to the Clinton Foundation that itself publishes financial statements, and let's go ahead and see if what that donor says it's giving to the Clinton Foundation is equal to what the Clinton Foundation says it received. That took some sleuthing. But I was able to find out that the biggest donor to the Clinton Foundation, remember I said they've declared $2 billion in cumulative inflows, is a secretive or shadowy entity based in Switzerland called Unitaid, U-N-I-T-A-I-D. And that entity publishes reports that in theory are reviewed. They're not really audited because they use an internal person as opposed to an external firm. But their reports are good. They show year by year, and they specifically identify how much money it was sent to the major recipients of money. And the Clinton Foundation is their biggest recipient in these crucial early years, 6, 7, and 8, 2006, 7, and 8. So the cumulative amount of money that Unitaid sent towards the Clinton Foundation is $600 million. A lot of money. And so then I said, all right, what part of the Clinton Foundation did they send that money to? And the entity name is something called Clinton Foundation HIV/AIDS Initiative, Inc. Remember I mentioned, you know, the first question is it really a charity? So I went and I looked in Massachusetts where this entity, this particular entity, was supposedly organized, and I discovered that its license to operate had been involuntarily revoked March 31st, 2008, with effect from December 31st, 2007. That is a very bad thing. You don't want to have it, see a charity have its license to operate revoked. So the combination of bad legal stuff, big discrepancies in those crucial early years, November 2006 through December 2008, this entity sent towards the Boston thing more than $200 million. But the Clinton Foundation declared as receipt about $100 million. There's $100 million missing during Hillary Clinton's first campaign. Now, why would that be? And there shouldn't be anything missing. So then I went around and said, all right, let's look at some of the other big donors. And I checked Bill Gates' foundation, what they say versus amounts that should have been in the Clinton Foundation. The big differences. There it's only tens of millions. There's one in the UK called the Children's Investment Fund. I checked their public disclosures. Again, their discrepancies. Then I checked the government of Australia. I reached out to them. Got a list of their grants. They don't match. Then I got checked the government of Norway. They don't match. Then I checked Ireland and the UK. They don't match. And that's not the way accounting works. You know, there shouldn't be a difference. Then the other thing I did is I checked the supposed audits against the tax form. The IRS makes you do your declaration two ways. First, you fill out their form, and they have specific categories, like revenues, types of expenses, and then you get an audit. And the numbers better match. But the IRS understands that sometimes conventions used by charities for tax purposes are different than for accounting purposes, so they have a reconciliation statement. Nothing matched. Nothing. And that is not, I mean, that's not a small warning sign. That's a gigantic problem.
Well, it's a gigantic problem not only related to the performance of the charity itself, or the so-called charity, but it also suggests that there's collusion someplace that encourages one agency or the other that should be keeping tabs on this to just turn a blind eye to what's going on and ask no questions. And in the meantime, you have an ex-president, an ex-secretary of state, who is also now a candidate for president and the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party for president. And you have all these other things that are going on around them, swirling around them, the eternal questions. This is not the first time questions have arisen about the transparency of the Clintons and their fiscal and financial dealings and political dealings. But we still get no movement whatsoever, not even from a very aggressive so-called Justice Department that should be looking, an aggressive IRS that should be looking at this, an aggressive FBI that should be looking at this. We get no such reaction in Congress that says, well, wait a minute, there are some huge red flags that are waving in front of our faces here. We need to take a look at this because people have been raising it all along. The source of the revenue for the various charities coming from all over the world, governments, which is an immediate red flag that would say, well, wait a minute, is this organization a lobby group, for example? Is this organization functioning within the stated purposes of the organization as they represented it when it was formed? These are really central questions here. And to think that all these years, this has been going on and unchecked until people like you come along and say, well, we need to start asking questions now. And then, of course, because you say that, people are going to say, ah, it's just one of those nut jobs who has it in for the Democrats. And well, that's why he's doing this.
Well, all right, I'll tackle that. in recent history in America, the only members of my family who've run for political office were Democrats. Mayor of Springfield, Illinois, 1846 to 1849, and a candidate for Congress in Montana in 1902, 4, and 6. So, you know, I don't like either party. And yes, I have in my long, I'm 60 years old, and all those years, I think the sum total of contributions I've given to politics has been $2,000. And I did so reluctantly, because I just really don't like giving politicians money. So, I'm not, as I said, running for office. I have told you that I don't like the example set by the Clintons. I've told you that I don't like also the example set by both H.W. Bush and W. Bush in connection with their work in foundations related to this Clinton Foundation. So, you know, I'm not somebody who's seeking a political advantage here or who looks at life through a political lens. That said, I understand. I think I understand what's going on in politics. I care deeply about this country. And I think on the issue of charity fraud, frankly, and I'm delighted to be on your show, Utrice, I don't think progressives believe in charity fraud any more than conservatives do. I mean, I think we can both agree that there's a special low place in hell, maybe underneath hell, for people who take advantage of the downtrodden in the guise of charity. That's a horrible thing to do. And, you know, here we have people who should know better. These aren't, you know, Hillary was, I think, voted the smartest, among the smartest lawyers in the world for many years. Bill was the Attorney General of Arkansas, then governor, then president. Neither can say they don't understand the law. Chelsea has a PhD and numerous other degrees. So these aren't people who, you know, made accidental technical traffic violations. Now, going back to, you know, why would it operate this way? Good charities have independent boards. Frankly, good companies have independent boards to make sure there's a balance between the line management and, you know, the strategic direction of the company or the charity. In this case, what the Clintons did is they packed the charity from the inception with Democratic hacks. And I will call Terry McAuliffe a total hack. He was in there in the beginning. When the Clintons were, quote, dead broke, you know, and in deep trouble financially in 2000, 2001 leading, he's the one who basically made it possible for them to have a fancy mansion in Chappaqua. That transaction is not in the Clinton Foundation books, and it should be. And they had a very small, tight set of trustees who were all political operatives, dependent on the Clintons, ultimately for, you know, their power in politics and for patronage. That's no way to run anything. And so, you know, this is, as I say, this is one thing I should say is, you know, I'm in touch with a professor in England at Oxford. And I talked to him last year. I said, you know, we should do a case study on this foundation to teach people how not to run a charity, not to run an international charity. That's my interest. Let this be an example. You know, they've already set up in Little Rock the facility that houses all the papers. That was the original purpose of this thing. That, no matter what happens here, that will continue. That facility has been donated to the National Archives and Records Administration. I think that happened in November of 2004. So, you know, it will be possible for the, you know, through the end of time to study Bill Clinton. Even if the trustees, executives, and others are severely punished and all other activities are forced to stop.
Well, you told us a really dismal story. What, to your view, is the likelihood, what is the likely scenario about how these billions and billions of dollars, I sound like Carl Sagan, billions and billions of dollars, were being mismanaged or have just simply disappeared? And nobody knows where the money went. What is your scenario? What is your theory about how that money just simply went poof?
I'm sad to say, I think it just got hived off. I mean, there's two pieces to my answer. The first piece is that, again, we don't know how much money was actually spent, in fact, towards the Clinton Foundation. It is possible that the Clinton Foundation has been in the business of manufacturing fictitious tax deductions, i.e., you know, you have somebody who needs to get a $500,000 write-off, and you get a crooked charity to issue a slip of paper that says, all right, here's your donation, but you don't give the charity any cash because nobody's checking the books, the book's balance. So we don't know how much money may actually be missing. We don't know, the cost, that's the biggest piece of it. How much disappeared between the amount sent towards the foundation and the amounts captured as incoming in the books. The next piece is going to be, were these travel expenses, which seem exorbitant, you know, were these major expense categories actually spent, or were, false invoices sent to mask that monies were stolen from the revenue? And now, lest you think I'm a conspiracy theorist on this issue, accountants do many things well, and one of the things they do is they write standards. There's actually a memorandum called Considerations of Fraud in Financial Statement Reporting, which is, if you need to get to sleep tonight, you can read it. but it takes you through in great depth, specific risk factors. And there are many risk factors here that are just obvious to anybody who's been around complex companies.
Well, I have to say, so far, this is an extraordinary story. Has any regulatory agency, has any investigative body reached out to you in as much as you're doing the work that they should be doing and you're posting it? Could you talk about your website and why you're putting these documents up?
Well, the reverse has happened. I have approached certain states, U.S. states, trying to get them to do something about it. So far, nothing has happened. In the public domain, we know that the FBI is in the middle of an investigation, and I have not directly or indirectly been in touch with the FBI, though I am told, I saw a television program where my name was mentioned by a prominent commentator who said that the FBI is, quote, fascinated with my work. So I would guess that they are looking at this. But I'm going to begin a process. You see, when you look at this, it's a case where people would be nervous in the political sphere about taking on the Clinton. Because what if Hillary wins? It reminds me a lot, if you study history, as I do, of the period in England where the king abdicated. The English press would cover it because they just didn't want to get in the mess, and the American press did the job. So what I'm doing now, as I have been for several months, reaching out to foreign governments and foreign investigative groups to look at this. Because when you break the law in the U.S., the charity, you're breaking it around the world. And some punishment regimes are extremely harsh. I'll give you an example. This charity that takes a lot of credit for fighting HIV/AIDS has never been authorized to do that. That's a serious problem. And beginning in 2004, they started operating in China, and they solicited money for that operation, among other things, getting money from a very wealthy man, a billionaire in Chicago called Fred Eichner, who's actually he's a hard left guy and very cautious and proper in the way that he runs his own foundation. So you go through his book, and you see he made donations to the Clinton Foundation to fight HIV/AIDS in China. Only it wasn't authorized to do that. Now, the penalty in China for charity fraud, which this is death. Now, penalties in China for many things are death, but they have actually gone against powerful people in China. A very rich lady, I forget, she was in the top 10 in the country, was sentenced to death for charity fraud, but her sentence was commuted to life in prison. So here's a case, 2004 it started, where the Clinton Foundation began to pursue a purpose for which it was not authorized. And there are all sorts of problems. So that's the biggest piece of the Clinton Foundation, the HIV/AIDS piece, not authorized.
Well, in fact, one of the agencies that informs the public about consideration of philanthropic entities and rates them, in fact, years ago said they had no idea how to even rate this agency, this Clinton Foundation, that it did not seem to follow any standard models of administration, and they didn't know quite how to categorize it. So they just decided to decline to rate the Clinton Foundation. In your view, we're talking here, let's talk about money and money that has just disappeared. And I'm thinking the biggest money scheme that we saw recently was Bernie Madoff. How would this compare to a Bernie Madoff type scam?
Good question. So in Bernie Madoff, this is a very similar thing happened. Indeed, just now in the press, somebody again is comparing me to the whistleblower in that case. Bernie Madoff made claims which anybody in the investment community knew at the time, any serious investor knew, were just ridiculous. That you could regularly outperform the market, taking less risk of the market. It's just not possible. And anyway, a lot of people fell for it because Bernie was great at manufacturing reports. That sound familiar? The auditor for the Bernie Madoff Fund, it turns out, wasn't in one of these big Park Avenue or fancy, office building auditors. No, he was in the second floor of a strip mall somewhere. And so, this is the similarity. When you see shoddy audits that don't make sense, these are big warning signs. Now, the difference between Bernie Madoff and the Clinton Foundation, one important difference is that the people who went to Bernie Madoff were greedy. I mean, they were attracted by the very high rates of return. Bernie was a very skillful fraudster, as many fraudsters are. And, he induced people to make stupid investments based out of greed. They thought that they were going to do a lot better. They thought they were being smarter than everybody else. And in the end, Bernie stole tens of billions of dollars. It's unclear exactly how big that fraud was. There are various estimates, but let's use a figure of $50 to $60 billion as the loss. In the case of the Clinton Foundation, there should be no greed involved. But that's when you start looking more carefully at this. A core piece of the Clinton Foundation is this thing called the Clinton Global Initiative. And that is a total fraud. It is not a charity. It is a very expensive meeting, set of meetings now, to where people go into a room, it's closed, you pay a membership fee that's way higher than the general public can afford, and you sit in there and you brag about what you might do. Not even a pledge, a hard pledge. And in the in your tax returns, you can't deduct a pledge. They coined this term commitment for action. Well, who else is in the room? All these former government leaders, these current government leaders. So over years, what happened is a bunch of sharp operators from around the world saw this as a great opportunity to curry favor with various governments, government leaders, who could give these sharp operators things like energy contracts, mineral contracts, timber contracts, telecom contracts. And that whole mess is covered partially in Peter Schweitzer's book and his documentary, Clinton Cash, that these very 600 people would appear at the meeting and say, I'm going to give $100 million. Well, there's no evidence provided by the Clinton Foundation or anywhere else that those pledges were actually funded. There's no accounting for any of this stuff. So nobody really knows how much money went towards the various pledges, whether they were indeed funded. After prodding, they put up what was supposed to be a searchable database of these pledges. But there's one very colorful case that I can tell you about that illustrates my point. In the early 2000s, I forget when exactly, a very handsome Italian guy, young kid, comes to New York and says, well, I'm really connected with the Vatican, and they've asked me to sell off surplus property in and around America. And with that great story, and he was, a classic Italian playboy type, next thing you know, he's dating an actress, Anne Hathaway. Next thing you know, he's doing this investment fund with a very flamboyant guy out on the West Coast called Ron Burkle. And next thing you know, he's making a pledge at the Clinton Foundation, a global initiative meeting, I want to say like $50 million, to The guy didn't have 50 cents. And he ultimately went to prison for fraud. Now, that episode is not on their website, though it's in the public domain. And there are many others like that.
I want to let you know that you came to my attention actually through the work of a Haitian journalist, Dadi Sherry, who writes for News Junkie Post, and it was a fascinating interview. And what was so fascinating about it is what emerged as the crux of the money-making mill here for the Clintons, and that is Haiti. So in our next installment, whenever we could arrange it, and I hope it will be soon, we will talk about the importance of Haiti to this money-making machine of the Clintons. What, in a nutshell, if you can, because we're running out of time soon, could you talk about the importance of Haiti as you have discovered it through your own forensic examination?
Well, yes, and Dottie Cherry does fantastic work along with her various associates. I had seen her work last year when I started on this, and I just had no idea how to contact her. I didn't know what the entity was, but I noticed how thorough it was. And then it struck me how awful it would be to take advantage of the poor people of Haiti again. I mean, I don't know the history of Haiti well, but I know it well enough to know that there have been a series of despicable people down there. And the poor are a lot worse off today than they were, you know, let's say 10 years ago, even though a lot of money has gone their way. So this is a case, I think, like some of the other disaster relief cases, which are so horrible, where the Clintons and their team, after disaster struck, said, okay, a lot of money is going to come towards this operation. Why don't we stand between the money and Haiti? And they did that, and they set up a system where there's absolutely no control. There's no audit of what really happened in Haiti. There's no good accounting in the main Clinton Foundation books about what happened in Haiti. And this is a case where George W. Bush's charity was involved in a small piece of this as well, so it's not just a Democratic problem. And here you have, as your listeners will know better than I, desperately poor, disadvantaged people, no infrastructure. And it's odd and sad because, you know, when you think about this country, you know, our modern history in theory began in 1492. Haiti, of course, is on a portion of the island that Christopher Columbus supposedly found. And, you know, it was a rich place. And now look at it. So I saw Dottie's work and I said, you know, this is a story that really needs to be told.
Well, she will be on with us because I really want her to tell that story about the importance of Haiti. We've had Kim Ives, who's been doing incredible work documenting the role of the Clintons in the deterioration or the further deterioration of Haiti. How do people get access to some of the documents that you have been putting up and to share with them how far you're going or how far you've come along in your own investigation?
Well, thank you for asking. And my website is very creatively named www.charlesortel.com. And the last name is spelled O-R-T-E-L. And on that website are all the reports that I've written. You get those free of charge. I really want the public to understand this, so I'm very anxious to have them shared as far and as widely as possible. I'm also on Twitter, and I try to do a good job sort of making comments, some jokes, some not so funny. And my handle there is @CharlesOrtel pushed together. And there you'll get more regular information about me. There has been a fair amount of interest in this, and I don't have a PR firm or anybody like organizing the website and my interviews. So another thing to do might be to Google me in quotes with the Clinton Foundation or the issues I care about, which include, you know, the various companies and lots of different portions around the world and economic issues. You can see there's been a fair amount of interviews and videos and other things that are out there.
Well, let's hope that we could arrange part two very, very soon. But I want to thank you for today giving us this snapshot of something that should trouble the entire country, if not the entire world, about this presumptive nominee for president of the United States and her husband, a former president of the United States, and the so-called foundation that you say is engaging in fraudulent activity. And you should know, you said it about GE, and you were right. So thanks so much for being with us today, spending this time, and we look forward to you being with us again real soon.
Well, thank you, Eutrice, and you name the date and time, and I'll be there.
All righty. Thank you. That brings us to the end of our program today. I hope you found it meaningful and informative. You can always, of course, go to the archive and share it with others. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.